Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Hardline. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We are broadcasting worldwide every Tuesday and Thursday, 1 to 3 Pacific Time, on the Time for Hemp Broadcasting Network, as well as iHeartRadio. You can listen on Spreaker at the Time for Hemp Broadcasting Network, or go to iHeartRadio and download the app. Go to hardlineradio.com for showtimes and news and current events, and please suggest a guest if you'd like to hear from someone. Today I will be speaking with Vinny Eastwood. He is a very wonderful, dear, close friend of mine. He is the host of The Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcast 5 days a week, 3 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vinny's websites are TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com, Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. He also has guerrillamedia.co.nz and realguerrillamedia.com, which I am a part of and very, very happy to be. Vinny, welcome to the program.
Yeah, maybe it's more trouble than it's worth.
Oh.
Well, I guess we'll find out in the fullness of time, won't we?
I think it's worth it.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's worth it.
Well, you know, I think when you devote yourself to the right causes for the right reasons, and you're not misled by some psychopath in charge of a religious cult or a media organization or something of that nature, then of course it's worth it, no matter how much crap you have to deal with as a result. And what I love about being a talk radio host in this particular movement is the massive quantity of abuse that I don't have to look at and can block said people and never hear from them again. It's beautiful, you know. Vinny, I hate you. You're a fat shill working for the government. Block! And I never hear from the motherfucker again. Oh, yeah. It reminds me of being a teenager, you know, when you had that kind of sick fascination with, oh, that's a big pimple, I want to squeeze that one out, you know.
Kind of,
you know, that's what trolls are, essentially. They're human representations of pimples that you just need to pop and get them out of there. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially when they squirt all over the mirror. All right. I'm sorry. Maybe I've started this off with a very, very lowbrow sort of thing. But generally, I'm quite positive and happy and funny and have lots of fun. And that's the whole point of the show, really.
Absolutely. That's why I asked you to come on, so that we could have some comedy on today. Because there's crazy, insane things happening. I got with Leon Pittard of Fair Dinkum Radio in Australia, and you know him as well. He brought me this story because the Australian government, is going to begin a GMO cholera vaccine initiative. They're going to be running this test a drug on children that has live cultures of a GMO cholera bacteria.
Oh, that sounds nice. I was just thinking about Leon Pittard, and he should name his show Let's Get Pittarded.
He's a really good guy.
He is. I love him.
Yeah, he's really awesome. So PaxVax is saying that they have a lot of control measures in place to restrict the spread and persistence of a GM vaccine. They've taken care of all the precautions. And they are in bed with the Australian Department of Health Office of Gene Technology Regulator. And they now have an application that is being considered to test. I can't go over this enough. 1,000 men, women, and children with a genetically modified version of the cholera bacteria. The cholera. It is deadly enough as it is, and they're giving a live version of a genetically modified deadly bacteria in a vaccine, and they will be giving it to men, women, and children. to test to see if it's efficient.
To see if it's efficient at doing what, I wonder. Protecting them from the virus that they, from the bacteria that they're giving them, or to is it effective at just giving them the bacteria and killing them?
Absolutely. Why would you inject live bacterium into a
human naturally
body if you did not mean to infect the body?
Well, naturally, you'd do it if somebody in a white lab coat told you to and said that it was good for your health and that there's scientific evidence. But where is the scientific evidence? Oh, you don't need to know any of that. Oh, okay then. So you want to give me a virus that's apparently going to be good for me and protect me from a virus by giving it to me, and you won't show me the evidence to suggest its efficacy, and you're actually experimenting on me. Is that about right? That's right.
Yes.
And does the vaccine have a printout sheet that I can read there? Why, yes, it does. And can I read that? Why, no, you can't. Well, why not? Well, because it says it'll kill you on it, and you won't take it and pay us money to kill you if you do. Oh, you could have loved science. It's just a barrel of laughs.
It is insane. So they already have one. It's a Dukoral. It's an oral vaccine. It's not recommended if the patient has an allergy to formaldehyde. Let me just stop right there. Formaldehyde is used for what, Vinny?
Aspartame Coke Zero?
When they embalm a body, they use formaldehyde.
Coke
it's
Zero.
A preservative for a dead body, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. How many – I don't know how many people – I'm not assuming that you know how many people have ingested enough formaldehyde to know that they're allergic to it.
How yeah, I mean, that'd be quite interesting, you know. When was the last time people, you know, did a test run? It's like, okay, everybody, have this shot and just drink it down, drink that shot of formaldehyde and see if it has a bad reaction. Well, wait, won't this embalm me from the inside out? Yeah, but we're just testing something, bro. Okay, come on, slurp it down. It'll be good. It'll be good. And then we'll find out whether or not something bad happens after something bad happens to you. Well, shouldn't I just avoid drinking formaldehyde in its entirety because it's actually not that good for anybody, full stop, let alone the people who are sensitive to it? Yeah, you probably shouldn't, but just drink it anyway. Jesus, what are you, a conspiracy theorist? Thinking too much, bro. Just do what an authority figure tells you. Shut up.
Yes. Formaldehyde was designed to preserve a dead body. It has no purpose other than to be a toxin to a living organism.
Oh my God, I just had a really scary thought. You know how I've been thinking about like the zombie apocalypse and what have you? What if the zombie apocalypse happened and people have drank so much Coke Zero that they're actually embalmed and preserved so that you have infinite zombies? That actually don't rot or anything like that. They literally just lumber around for ages and ages, eating everything. Oh, wait a second. I just described half the U.S. population.
Okay. If you believe some media outlets, you will believe that just a couple of days, weeks ago, or maybe it was about a week and a half ago. Let me correct myself. A woman showed up at a drive-thru at McDonald's. And the media outlet that covered the story claimed that this woman was a real zombie. And not satire. That they actually made the case that the George Romero films, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead, were actually documentaries because this woman was an actual zombie out of the George Romero films. And as seriously as I'm speaking to you, they explained that this woman was a real zombie at a McDonald's drive-through, bashing glass and abusing the employees because she wanted chicken nuggets and they weren't serving them.
Oh, yeah, I recall that story. That video is actually quite old. It's interesting. It was released, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, like 18 months ago on the internet. and the media only just reports on it just recently. And so it's going on about zombie apocalypse. Now, as far as I know, in the George A. Romero films, none of the zombies abused people.
Right? Other than grabbing them and eating them, but yes.
And see, that's not verbal abuse. I mean, last time, you know, I saw a zombie try and attempt to verbally abuse somebody, it just came out as, and that was about it. You know, not exactly something to feel that insulted about. And for the mainstream media to say that this woman actually was a zombie when she was not rotting, she was speaking and actually was highly energetic and not slow and lumbering and so on and forth. And also she was driving a car.
Yes.
Okay. Zombies can't drive cars, man. They don't got the motor reflexes, yo.
So this story, as if it were true, I watched the video. I have to say I hadn't seen it before. But when I watched the video, I realized that, yes, this woman was pale. It could have been poor lighting. It did look like her eyes were sunken in, but again, it could be the poor lighting and where the light was coming down, shining down on her. She was obviously emaciated, and she looked like she was probably on something extremely potent, like meth.
It seemed like she was a meth head to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That seemed precisely the reaction you would expect from somebody who's on copious quantities of crack and then is really, really angry that they arrived at a time where it's not possible to get chicken nuggets.
Yes.
Have you actually seen this video by the health ranger where they took a microscope and had a look at them chicken nuggets?
I did, and I saw something interesting. When something is embedded in something else, like when they find something not natural inside a hamburger, it's usually embedded in the burger, not laying on top. I thought that was interesting, that the little fiber that they found was on top instead of embedded in. Just an observation.
Yeah. Well, the fibers, little red blemish areas and all of this other really weird stuff. It was almost like you were looking at some sort of an alien landscape. Like, it didn't look natural, man. Like, where is the chicken? There just ain't no chicken in chicken nuggets, bro.
No, there is. Just, no.
It's ground up chicken feet and beaks and combs and feathers and freaking goodness knows what else, you know, just the off cuts of the chicken.
Yes.
You know?
And it's glued together with pink slime.
Yeah. See, I swore off eating bioweapons about 5 months ago. I haven't had anything. I mean, Sarah got really drunk and I had to get her some Burger King the other week, but the other reason why, I mean, I don't eat fast food anymore is because I gained like 10 kilos in a month and a half just eating fast food, and I came to this realization: if it comes from an authority figure, like a piece of information, then it's probably the exact opposite of whatever they say it is. So the politicians aren't there to ensure they protect your freedoms. They're actually there to legislate them away. The medical system's not there to save your life. It's there to profit off of your death. And the second general rule of life is if you can't make it at home by yourself, then it's probably some form of soft-kill bioweapon. And when I came to those realizations, I was like, I really don't want to eat soft-kill bioweapons anymore, you know, just for my health.
Yeah, I made the same decision when I was out in Colorado, eating healthy organic food. When we did go back to the city and eat, not fast food, but just like maybe It was at the grocery store, and it's the hot meals that you can get at the counter in the deli. I got sick, like seriously ill. Won't touch it anymore. That was it.
It's because they're poisons, and once your body's not used to them, it starts to reject them if you ingest them anymore. And I think this is a natural, healthy response. Don't you think, ladies and gentlemen, that if what you're eating is bad for you, that you perhaps shouldn't be eating it? And, you know, the real problem is that almost all of the food that is available is poison. Very little of it that is available is actually good for you. And if it is good for you, it's prohibitively expensive. However, there was a study of homeless people in Brooklyn this one time. I know we're coming to break soon, so I'll finish this up quickly. And they studied these homeless people, and their diet was mostly sardines. And they studied a whole bunch of wealthy, affluent people, and their diet consisted of whatever they wanted to buy. And it turned out that those people who were able to eat anything that they wanted and had no price restrictions were remarkably less healthy than the homeless people who could only eat sardines. So just because you're broke doesn't mean you can't be healthy. And if you've got dirt, you've got free food. It's just that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the other night I got sick. I have an allergy to penicillin. I ate some brie cheese and the crust on the outside is made with penicillin. And I got sick and I threw up because my body rejected it because I have an allergy to it. It's the same thing. When you eat this crap food, you get sick because it's not good for you. It's meant to poison you and your body's trying to reject it. We'll come back in a few moments, ladies and gentlemen. I'm speaking with Vinnie Eastwood of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And you're listening to Hardline with Suzanne Posel. Don't go away. Welcome back to Hardline. I am Suzanne Posel, and I have with me Vinnie Eastwood of thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Vinnie, I got to bring up another article that I have up here on occupycorporatism.com. Princeton University is trying to decide whether or not they want to administer a meningitis vaccine to students that has not been approved by any regulatory body, including the FDA.
See, I thought meningitis was a division of the Men in Black.
Meningitis is actually polio. They just call it a new name. It's actually polio.
And also, allegedly, chronic fatigue syndrome is a polio variant brought on by a vaccine reaction.
That would make sense because the CDC website and the World Health Organization website both agree that people are contracting polio through the polio vaccine.
Yeah. Isn't polio Italian for police or something?
I don't know. But listen to this, okay? They have meningitis vaccines on the market, okay? But this goes back to what we were talking about before the break and what's going on in Australia with PaxVax, and they want to do this test run with live cultures of cholera inside a vaccine to test its efficiency. Here we have Princeton University discussing whether or not they are going to vaccinate students or mandate. I mean, by New Jersey law, it's if you live in a dormitory and there's other restrictions, then you have to be vaccinated. But this vaccine has not been approved, and the CDC is going to go ahead and ship it into the country out from Europe and from Australia. So they're going to supply it. They're saying that it's a Group B meningitis that was spread on the Princeton University campus. But group B meningitis is typical of what strikes infants and adolescents, but not adults.
And here I was thinking that it was rock stars that had all the group Bs.
This obviously doesn't make sense. Well,
it doesn't make sense to you or I, because we have this thing called a conscience, logic. But if we were criminal, ruthless, sociopathic scum, this would make perfect sense. This would be affecting our bottom line, wouldn't it?
This is obviously a scam to test a unregulated vaccine on people, on students at Princeton University, probably because they fit a gender profile to prove the validity and the efficiency of the vaccine. Why else would they be giving them an unregulated vaccine? Not that vaccines themselves do anything for you, but on top of it, it's not been approved by anyone, and they're going to ship it into the country and start sticking young adults, late teens, early 20s, with it.
Designer autism. Have you heard of this term?
Explain this to the audience.
Okay. An autistic person has no emotional awareness. An autistic person doesn't really know whether or not you're being serious or joking or lying or whatever. So they make perfect workers because they don't question authority and they do precisely what they're told, how they're told, and you can treat them with emotional disdain and they won't even notice. And apparently the elite want this to be the mental disorder of as many people as humanly possible, because they'd be a great workforce that wouldn't question, and you can emotionally abuse them and have no consequence because they wouldn't worry about it and they wouldn't even perceive it. That's designer autism. And apparently this is what the elite are planning. It's a massive worldwide forced vaccination campaigns whereby some people will have a bad reaction and die. Some people will have this designer autism reaction, and some people will appear to be fine and unaffected, really. That's basically the agenda as far as I've been explained this by Christine England. I think Vodafone in the UK has a team of 400 autistic people working under them, I think, in programming or something of that. I'm not 100% sure, but, you know, if you're a social engineer, as the elite definitely are, then this is a gold mine, potentially.
Sure. And then you have initiatives like in California where they're altering the exemption for California parents, making it extremely difficult, incriminating, getting the parents to sign off on a document which violates their Fifth Amendment rights to not self-incriminate. Oh, you go in and you sit with the pediatrician and they tell you that you're endangering your child, and then you sign off on a document which goes not only into the file at the pediatrician's office, but also a file with the government.
So it goes into the pediatrician's file. Do they call them pediophiles?
Yeah, they probably should, actually.
Yeah.
All right, you're not giving your child the vaccination. All right, that goes right into your pedophile. I'll have that on you for the rest of your life.
But this is incredibly dangerous because the parents in California who can't homeschool their children are being forced to sign a document that outlines with a healthcare practitioner, a nurse or a doctor, that they understand that they're endangering their child. And that's not true. By not vaccinating does not mean that you're not endangering. I mean that you're endangering your child.
Yeah, if anything, you're protecting them. And let's see, I think in New Zealand, it's roughly 5%, staunch 5% of parents will not vaccinate their children. And now in New Zealand, they're introducing legislation whereby if you want to attend a public school, you are required to have your vaccination because you might infect the rest of the herd. That's why they call it herd immunity. Vaca comes from a Spanish word meaning cow, which is derived from the Latin. And incidentally, what happens is you've got the government purchasing off of big vaccine companies these products and then forcing you to attend public school. In a lot of cases, you basically get compelled to do it. It's very, very hard to do homeschooling, as you say, and then force your medicine on them. By medicine, I mean a soft-kill bioweapon. And it occurs to me in the historical context that this has kind of happened before. I know that everybody likes to go on about Nazi Germany, but here's an interesting anecdote. The first piece of legislation that took away people's rights to do something in Nazi Germany wasn't the Jews or anything else. It was homeschoolers first and foremost, so that they could force your children into the government indoctrination schools, where you have to say the Pledge of the Allegiance every day. Hey, mein Gott, Deutschland, you know, whatever the hell the Hitlerian speech was at the time. And as a result, you indoctrinate an entire generation of children into being willing servants of the state who see the state as their family, because they previously had been taught by their family how to be adults, live in the world, but now the state had 100% utter control of them. And that public school system is still in effect today, isn't it? We got this massive awareness starting to break out about the dangers of the public schooling system, how it dumbs children down, and how it's doing so purposefully. And I think giving them a vaccine and giving them a wee bit of designer autism, I think is a good step in that same direction, except it's a tad more insidious because they tell you it's good for your health. And this is why one of my assumptions, as I mentioned in the previous segment, is if it comes from an official authority, it is the direct opposite of what it is. Public schools meant to educate you. No, it's not. It's meant to train you like a dog and dumb you down. And they, we need to give you vaccines because otherwise you'll infect the herd. Well, actually, no, you're deliberately infecting me so that I'll be just as sick as the rest of the herd. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation financed a study back in October about Common Core state standards, saying that schools love it, kids love it, educators love it, it's great. And even Obama came out earlier this year saying that we need to have career-ready standards in schools. So they're creating people to go to work. They're not educating you. You're not learning about history or science or life or anything useful. You're learning how to be career ready.
Yeah. Well, this is actually lifted straight out of the Agenda 21 documents. It says personal liberties are to take a back seat to the collective, and the people who are more educated in society currently consume more resources. Therefore, it is in benefit to the planet for people to be less educated and better prepared in the world of work.
Absolutely. And to make the assembly line part of your daily existence, so that you don't see that you're a factory worker on an assembly line pushing out product, that you go to work, you do that, and you come home. So you don't have to see it. It's a prison without bars.
It's a brave new world, you know. It's the deltas, essentially. That's what it is. I want to buy new, shiny things. I am happy to do the exact same thing all day, every day, and have these announcements repeated to me so that my mind control gets completely reinforced. And if I get upset or angry, they'll either A, give me a drug named Soma to make me okay with how much everything sucks, or they'll just disappear me. Doesn't that sound like a nice, loving society to you? You know, freedom is something that people don't understand. I don't think they do to a large degree anymore. Freedom is about not having to do what people tell you to do if you don't want to, all right? Not to be compelled with violence, the use of force, without your consent. And they figured out this, that people will consent to anything so long as they think that they don't even have a choice. Mm-hmm. That's the sad part about it. We do have a choice about what we do, who we listen to, how we live. Yet we're not given the options. We're not told precisely the consequences of said choices is. This is our society, in a nutshell, a world where everybody appears to be free because their own mind, in complete opposite to reality, tells us that we are. And we're really not. That's the tragedy of it. We have so much potential with the human family, species, whatever you want to call it. And I don't think that potential is being reached. I think that it is indeed dangerous for people who don't like freedom for anybody to have it. Like, actually dangerous. A free person will kill you if you try and murder them. A free person will protect their children if you try and kidnap them. A free person will not pay his parking tickets and take you to court if there's no lawful basis for it. A free person won't pay their taxes and demand that you show them the law. These are not people the government wants around influencing other people. You just imagine people like us everywhere talking smack about the government. These conversations need to be had at the dinner table, in the morning, at the breakfast, and they need to be said and talked about in your classrooms, during your lunch breaks at work. These conversations need to be had all over the place. I think this is the reason why work, and thank goodness I don't have to work for scumbags anymore, was so depressing to me, Suzanne. It's like I didn't get to have any of these kind of conversations. Everybody was just obsessed with doing things that didn't matter, wasting their freaking time on this planet. I mean, think about it. There's 7 billion people. Why would you hang out with people who don't encourage you? People who don't inspire you? People who don't enlighten you? What the hell is the point in that when you've got so much other choice?
Vinny, let's continue this conversation on the other side. I have to take a break. Folks, don't go away. You're listening to Hardline with Suzanne Posel, and I'm speaking with Vinny Eastwood. His website is thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Join us on the other side. Welcome back to Hardline. I'm Suzanne Posel, and I'm speaking with Vinny Eastwood, the host of the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcast 5 days a week on American Freedom Radio. His website is thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, guerrillamedia.co.nz, and realguerrillamedia.com. Before we went to break, Vinny, you mentioned something that brings me to another article that I have. It's actually the headline story. Declassified documents reveal government spying on patriots as a threat. And they listed triggers for the NSA were Americans who believe in the First Amendment, speak or write in opposition to the government, worship at a mosque, work as a journalist. There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
So basically, anybody who believes in constitutional rights granted by God is a bad person and a terrorist and a threat to tyranny.
Yes.
Sounds about right.
Yes. And in these declassified documents, a lot of the information was redacted, of course. Obama started throwing George Bush under the bus. It's not my fault. This guy started this way back when, you know. James Clapper, director of national intelligence, comes out and explains that Obama told him to make public as much information as possible about certain sensitive programs while being mindful of the need to protect sensitive classified intelligence activities and national security. But here are these documents. It goes back 7 years ago, when the Bush administration ordered the collection of information on all domestic phone calls to be made under the authority of the Patriot Act and all, quote, relevant, whatever the hell that means, records of business transactions taken up in investigations. But they swear that they weren't listening to the phone calls.
Yeah.
They have everything else, but they don't listen to your phone calls. They promise.
They listen to everything. Everything.
Everything.
I'm reading, you know, I haven't read a book in nearly 10 years, Suzanne, and I'm starting to read a book now called Totalitaria, written by award-winning New Zealand journalist Ian Wishart. He goes through this. I've only finished the first chapter thus far, but yeah. These programs that they've got, what has been called PRISM, and a number of other different programs that have been used by DARPA, the CIA, a program called QIntel, and PROMIS, just PROMIS, have been used for a long time to surveil absolutely every single thing that goes on online, offline, phone calls, email, etc., anything, absolutely anything and everything, whether you're presumed innocent or presumed guilty, doesn't matter. They just data mine the whole time.
Yes.
Don't think for a moment, ladies and gentlemen, that anything that you do on an electronic device has any form of privacy. Facebook has no privacy, okay? Mark Zuckerberg was given 12 million in order to start up
by Peter Thiel,
who was I think he was chair of the American Venture Capital Association, and Peter Thiel, and this guy is also a CIA contractor, I think. So what the CIA does is, because they can't develop all the software and sophisticated algorithms to surveil the whole world by themselves, what they do is they insert CIA people into venture capital, so that in the IT industry, as soon as somebody comes up with a great idea that will allow them to collect massive quantities of data, they then siphon some of those ideas and foster them and then start using them. All right. And that's all that is. And they build in back doors so that only the CIA or the NSA or whichever agency is particularly involved in funding that specific data mining program can access all information.
Yes.
And this whole concept of, if you're not doing anything wrong, if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear, is actually the direct opposite. If you have nothing to hide, then you definitely have something to fear. If you have a look at, say, New Zealand, we've recently had a bill similar to the USA Patriot Act, but more or less it just ties our intelligence agencies to the NSA. It's called the GCSB bill, the Government Securities and Scumbaggery Bureau, or whatever it's called. And it has an office of the NSA in it, and it allows them to surveil anybody for any reason, at all times, legally, without warrants. Now, 88 people, apparently political activists and whatnot, were under surveillance by the GCSB illegally, and that was leaked. How many people at the GCSB went to jail for breaking the law? None. How many people got even slightly disciplined or even called in to do so much as a hearing on surveilling 88 of New Zealand's top political activists illegally? None. And how many of these activists have actually been given the information as to whether or not it was in fact them being surveilled. None. They can neither confirm nor deny. This is the future. They know everything about you at all times, and if you're doing nothing wrong, you have something to fear, particularly if you're trying to do something that the government doesn't want you to do. Like, for example, teach people about being free or try to expose some form of scumbaggery or corruption. If you're doing any of that, then you have a hell of a lot to fear from the government, because guess what the source of all corruption and scumbaggery is? The government. All right? People say, oh, no, it's not the government that does that, it's the corporations. Really? Who allows the corporations to do what they do? The government does. Why does the government have that power? Because they've got the monopoly of force, okay? A government can kill people. A government can bash people over the skull. There have been 1,433 deaths caused by the New Zealand police since 1967. Okay? 1,433. Do you have any idea how many of those cops who were guilty of murder, at the very least manslaughter, have even so much as been disciplined, promoted, fired, or jailed? Not one. Not one. They can kill you. They can beat you over the head. They can rape you. They can smash and steal your private property. But because they work for the government and have the monopoly of force, you have no recompense. You have no recourse of any kind. But if a citizen kills a police officer, and this has happened on occasion in New Zealand, nobody in New Zealand who has ever killed a police officer has a life expectancy longer than 18 months. All right? You kill a police officer, you're dead. The police will kill you. Either that, or they will use their gang connections to do it for them. Allegedly, the police are really, really heavily involved with drug trafficking, and as a result are very tight with lots of gangs because they supply their drugs. They can easily raid some kind of drug den, steal all their contraband, and then walk next door to another gang, sell it to them, or trade it for a death contract. They have that power. Because what are the gangs going to do? Refused the police's orders? The police are in your house trying to sell you drugs. What are you going to do? Go to the police and ask them to arrest them? Who does all the investigation of the police in New Zealand? Oh, yeah, that's right. The Independent Police Conduct Authority. Why do they call it Independent Police Conduct Authority? Well, because it's run independently by the police, staffed exclusively by police, and actually proceed in the cover-up of any complaints against police.
That's how they keep it all in the family.
The police in New Zealand refer to themselves as the largest gang in the country. That's how they refer to themselves. This is the reason why I fear police. It's the same reason I fear gang members, and the same reason I fear judges. It's because none of them have any respect for the rule of law. And I fear police and gangs slightly more than I fear judges, because judges aren't on the street. Judges don't use physical violence without provocation against you, okay? Judges can send you to jail, right? So that's a big scary power. But that's the way law enforcement works. You're either a gang member in a suit or a gang member wearing a Masonic checkered hat, or a gang member wearing a patch. And these are the true rulers of society. Corporate gang, bureaucratic gang, or just a regular criminal gang. And all of them fall under the same umbrella of criminal gang as well, depending on how you look at it. Well, those are who run society.
We have to go to break, and we'll come back on the other side and talk more about this, folks. We have another hour with Vinnie Eastwood. His website is thevinnieeastwoodshow.com, and we will be right back, folks. Don't go away.
You don't need no friends. Get back your faith again. You have the power to believe. Another dissident. Take back your evidence. It has no power to deceive.
I believe it when I see it for myself.
Welcome back to Hardline. I'm your host, Suzanne Posel. We are speaking today with Vinnie Eastwood. He is the host of TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, broadcast 5 days a week, 3 to 5 Pacific time on American Freedom Radio. His websites are TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, GorillaMedia.co.nz, and RealGorillaMedia.com. Now, before we went on break, when you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, I put out this article about how the CIA has been using the Patriot Act to spy on Americans' bank transactions. And some of the reaction I got from it was, of course they are. Of course they're looking at your banking transactions. That's not news. That's not a big deal. And I just, I kind of do that palm to the face kind of motion where, why is that not okay? That's still happening. The corruption is still happening. Why is that all of a sudden okay? Because it's old corruption.
Corruption's corruption. Scumbaggery is scumbaggery. And it must be exposed. No matter who it is. It doesn't matter whether it's your best friend and confidant or your worst enemy. You've got to expose the scumbaggery. I mean, look at it this way. The only reason why any bad thing happens in the entirety of society is because there's a scumbag behind it every single time, invariably. So the reason why it's so important to expose scumbaggery is to prevent bad things from happening, because it's the cause of all bad things. I don't know why people don't get this. You know, they try to dismiss it as infighting or whatever, but it's not.
When there are actual documents proving an assertion or proving a theory, when there are actual documents showing you that what you thought was happening is actually going on, it takes it to a whole new level. And it needs to be recognized with that respect, that now you have actual evidence to show that what you thought was happening is actually happening, and you have to deal with it from that perspective on, in light of this evidence proving your theory. I don't understand why people will agree to that as far as investigative journalism goes. But
it's because they appeal to authority. And even journalists say, oh, well, that person's a credible journalist. I'll appeal to them. They must be an authority on something. When the reality is, if you are in a position of power and control and or influence, whether that be a doctor, a lawyer, a politician, a radio host, or a television newscaster, it is very, very likely that that person could quite possibly be a psychopath. All right? Because the reason why I can say this categorically is because I'm quoting from the American Medical Journal, who said that these are the industries which psychopaths cluster in. Okay? How do you define a psychopath? Well, it's a person who's very smiley and happy and friendly when you first meet them, but ultimately doesn't have any long-lasting relationships and doesn't care about anybody other than themselves. Doesn't it sound like almost every employer you've ever had? What's the commonality here? Power and control. Influence. Entourage. They love having an audience. They love manipulating people. They love deceiving. They love committing scumbaggery. It's the only thing that motivates them. And unless they've got power and control over other people, they wouldn't be able to fulfill their desire.
That is a pervading ideology that is seeped into our everyday life. We display as a culture, as a society, psychopathic behaviors toward each other. But there are actually real instances where historically you can see with Hitler, with Stalin, that these people have an ability toward influencing the general population and utilizing crowd psychology and utilizing things that were shown in the Ash conformity study, that people want to be part of a crowd, that people want to belong to something, that they will not go against the crowd, that they have a personal interest invested in the person they look up to. And so if that person that they look up to is corrupt, it becomes a personal identification issue with the audience. And so by putting the audience in that position, they create this strange army of people who will do anything, even if it goes against their morals, ethics, and values.
That's right. I mean, how do you suppose Germans were influenced into instituting a police state on their own people and asking them for papers wherever they go and taking away all of their freedoms? It wasn't because everybody in Germany was a bad person. It was because they were all indoctrinated into crowd psychology, into groupthink, into silo mentality, right? If you've got an authority figure in a uniform, in a lab coat, or with a microphone, they can get you to do things that you would never do on your own. They can get you to commit crimes. They can get you to commit murder. They can get you to lie through your teeth in defense of them. You know, this is the problem that we're dealing with. Is crowd psychology very, very powerful? This is the reason why shock jocks are so influential, because people always listen to them. If they say something really crazy and outlandish, that's when somebody will start listening to them. Somebody says something that's perfectly reasonable and profound, bugger all, people will listen to you. All right, this is the way society has been influenced these days, and it's quite sad to see. I'm just glad that I'm not one of those shock jocks, that I'm not one of these evil, manipulative, psychopathic filth who care nothing about human dignity, who care nothing of respect, who care nothing of patriotism, who are heartless and are followed by the mindless. I'm glad I'm not one of those people. What occurred to me is like, I get attacked quite a bit by people in my position. And I have my listeners who occasionally come round to my place, who I've met at protests and what have you. And what occurred to me is that none of them like me and stick up for me for no good reason, right? They all know precisely why they listen to my show. They all accurately perceive the things that I'm saying. They don't go out and abuse people on my behalf. They don't write hit pieces on people on my behalf, unless that person is actually evil, has actually done wrong. And this is the thing that I feel actually defines me as very, very different from other talk radio show hosts in this field. I mean, number one, I'm from New Zealand. Name me another talk radio show host from New Zealand who's talking about this kind of stuff, you know, in America. It just doesn't happen. It's because I know more about America than the majority of Americans, which is a very sad indictment on the country, I must say. However, the salt of the earth, this is an old movie, and this is something that I think embodies, at a large extent, my audience, because they are the salt of the earth. They are really nice, decent people. Vast majority, I think about 80% of my listeners, according to my YouTube rankings, are between the ages of 40 and 65. Okay, so that means 8 out of 10 of the people who listen to me are roughly twice my age, have twice my life experience, right? And they've maintained, despite all those decades of public education, propaganda from the media, medical mafia misadventure, they've maintained their own sense of freedom and their own ability to discern truth from fiction. This makes my audience, in my opinion, one of the most intelligent audiences in talk radio, one of the audiences with the most integrity. Every conversation that I have with them, whether it be on Skype or in person or on Facebook or whatever, seeks to only reinforce that fact. And what I tell people is that if I ever become corrupted, if heaven forbid I become some form of douchebag, I wish my audience to be honest enough and have enough integrity to expose me for the scumbag that I have become. For if anybody in a position of influence, such as a radio show, gets to the point where they believe their own BS, then they cease to have value to the so-called truth movement. This is my belief. And once that happens, there really isn't any going back until somebody exposes you. And that's why I would wish to be exposed if I did start to be some kind of a scumbag. This is why I love to be criticized, because it either gives me an opportunity to sit back and go, oh my God, they're right. I have been doing this wrong, haven't I? Or, even better, it gives me a chance to defend my position and bring some understanding to the person who might be criticizing me without seeing the full spectrum of information that I've used to make my decisions. Putting people on a pedestal, saying that they're above suspicion, saying that they can't be criticized, is the precisely wrong thing to do, particularly in this sphere of influence. Nobody is above reproach. Everybody should be suspect. A suspicious mind is a healthy mind. You can trust somebody, but make sure you trust them based upon sound evidence. If they make a claim and have absolutely zero evidence to back it up, then they're lying or they're misinformed. And if you criticize them and say, well, you made this claim, but you don't have any evidence to back it up, and they block you or start gang stalking you or something, you know that you're not dealing with an honest, decent radio host. You're dealing with a psychopath, because they don't like criticism. They don't like anybody showing them up for what they are. There's only two things that they fear. Worse psychopaths, who play by just as many rules as they do, i.e. none, or being exposed, being put out to the light of day. But the difficulty here is, if you've got an audience behind you, you've got a veritable army for which to demonize, propagate disinformation and so on and so forth against the people who are trying to expose you. And people have an emotional investment in not exposing radio hosts or other individuals that they've put up on a pedestal. And there's a good reason for that, because you spent all that effort, all that emotional investment, pushing somebody up above you onto a pedestal. Once they come crashing down, it's not just them that falls, but it is you as well, because they fall right onto you, the person who put them up there. All right? Understand that we're all human, or some of us anyway, and that we all make mistakes. And if you put somebody on a pedestal, you are setting yourself up to fail. Okay? Every single person that I've ever had max respect for has disappointed me at some point. Really? I'm not kidding. Everybody has done things that I disagree with or feel wrong about or whatever. But if they apologize or change their tune and or continue to do what they say they're going to do, then they're definitely not a psychopath. Psychopaths don't ever apologize for anything, ever. You know, seriously, think about this. Have you ever seen anybody attack someone else and then turn out that they're wrong and then never apologize for it or even mention it? That's not a good person. That's not somebody who understands what apologizing and being human is really about.
I agree. When you look at what Gustave Le Bon was saying with crowd psychology, and I don't have time to get into this. We'll get into it on the other side. I want to explain to everyone, because I want to go into this, how crowd psychology works. What Gustave Le Bon was talking about, this is what Edward Bernays and Sigmund Freud brought to the United States with the government and corporations and advertising and everything, the structure of our society inside of public schools. This idea was brought in, and this is what controls our world. And when we come back from break, I want to get into this. So, folks, don't go away. You're listening to Hardline with Suzanne Posel, and I am speaking to Vinnie Eastwood of The Vinnie Eastwood Show, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and we will be back in just a few moments.
You don't need no friends. Get back your faith again. You have the power to believe. Another dissident. Take back your evidence. It has no power to deceive.
I believe it when I see it for myself.
Welcome back to Hardline. I'm Suzanne Posel, and my guest is Vinnie Eastwood, TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Before we went to break, Vinnie, I wanted to read these out to the audience, because what Gustave Le Bon spoke about was that a crowd exists and evolves in three stages: submergence, contagion, and suggestion. So in submergence, the first stage, the individuals lose their sense of individuality and sense of personal responsibility. And research shows that this occurs because of the sense of anonymity to the individual that is fostered by the crowd. So people think that because they're in a crowd, they can't be seen. If a bottle goes flying out of the crowd, who knows who threw it? And in contagion, the second stage, it reveals the propensity of the individual to follow the crowd unquestioningly toward a directed set of goals and emotional responses that overpower the individual's personal knowledge of right and wrong. So they will then, at the stage of contagion, just behave like a crowd. You hear it referenced that the crowd had a mind of its own. And these people start to behave as one organism. At the third stage, which is suggestion, the uncivilized behavior overtakes the crowd as a wave through each individual's unconscious because of a single person's belief and ideas, which then can be implanted into the crowd and adopted by all individuals. This is when one guy stands up, if there's a huge crowd in the middle of the street, one guy stands up on the hood of a car and starts expounding on something, and the whole crowd will do whatever he says at that point. That is why this methodology and use of this methodology against an audience is extremely destructive. And the person using it needs to... The audience needs to be given the tools to recognize when they are being taken for a ride.
Yeah. Well, see, it occurred to me yesterday, actually, Suzanne, I was thinking about this crowd psychology. And as I was reading Ian Wishart's ebook, Totalitarian, he was mentioning about the propensity for societies to simply crumble and collapse because of the words of one person controlling the crowd. And I thought to myself, hey, what if I was that person? What if I got up and through my mellow accent and capacity to put words together, manipulated a crowd into recognizing what crowd psychology is? manipulated a crowd into thinking for themselves, manipulated a crowd so to recognize that they're being brainwashed, manipulated them into being unmanipulable. Right? The irony is that once I've got power over people's minds like that, then I would become corrupted by simply having the power over people's minds. And there would be very little to stop me from attempting to accomplish my own goals and aims in charge of that crowd. So I choose to think about this in terms of how can I do this, but be very ironic when I do it. I was just thinking, maybe I should run for parliament. Okay, so I'll get up and I'll be running as an independent. And my campaign platform will be more of the same. And people ask me, what are your policies? And I say, well, I'm just going to copy all of the other parties' policies so that they're exactly the same and there's no real foreseeable difference. And then I'll lie and tell them that I came up with them myself. And then when people vote me in, I won't actually implement any of those policies at all. I'll just tell people, oh, the previous government got us into too much debt or whatever, so now I've got to screw you all over and not keep a single one of my promises. But it's not my fault. It's the other guy's fault for messing this round. I wasn't lying to you. They were just deceiving you, and now I have to carry on and perpetuate the lie. Otherwise, everybody will be really angry with me for telling the truth.
You know what's funny? Here's what's funny. That just happened. Yeah, no, that just happened. Going back to those declassified documents that I was talking about earlier in the broadcast, the Obama administration is doing that right now. It's not my fault. It's the Bush administration. Here's all these documents we've released. We've declassified all these documents. Look, we're just carrying along the programs that the Bush administration put in. It's not our fault. Don't get mad at us. Here, look, here's the evidence.
Yeah, but I'll tell people that it probably is my fault, but and then just tell them that I'm just going to lie about it. Like, this is during the campaign process, you know, when you tell everybody what they want to hear.
Like, we need change.
Yeah. I'll tell you, we need change like a baby does, you know, and for the same reason. I'll just be like, well, what's your policy on helping the economy? And go, well, I'm planning on getting us monstrously into debt to foreign bankers and then selling out everything that we've got that actually makes us revenue in order to pay the interest on those, so that the bankers will not only have us massively in debt so that we'll all be indentured servants, but we also won't have any resources and no ability to pay off all of the debt, so that nobody will actually have any form of freedom because they'll have to work as a slave on big plantations or something like that that the government will put up, and then everything will be hunky-dory. And we'll increase your taxes at the same time as well to pay more debt to the bankers. As well as that,
I know.
That's what my campaign promises are. More of the same. Just do exactly what everybody else is doing, but just be honest with them and just say, look, this is what I'm planning to do. Vote for me if you want more of the same. At least I'll be honest about it, you know? I mean, come on. People crave an honest politician who says, look, I'm going to frack all of you. I'm going to lie to you endlessly. I'm going to deceive you into supporting policies that are against your interests. Vote for me, ladies and gentlemen. You voted for everybody else who's been doing this exact same thing that I'm doing to you now. What's changed? Keep going. More of the same, ladies and gentlemen. Please, vote for me. I promise to lie to you. I promise to undermine the country's sovereignty. I promise to legislate away your rights. I promise to increase your taxes. I promise to destroy the governance structure of the entire country. I promise to ignore your submissions. I promise to ignore your referendums. I promise to ignore your petitions. I promise to ignore any kind of political activism or dissident. I promise to surveil as many political dissidents as possible if they are indeed a threat to the agenda of my bank buddies. I promise to frack your country over completely. Vote for me if you want nothing to change.
That sounds an awful lot like every gentleman who got actually into office, he said the exact opposite and did exactly what you just said.
Precisely. Okay. I will win by a fracking landslide, all right? Because people will be used to it. They'll be like, oh my God, this guy's talking a lot of sense. He'd frack over the country, destroy our sovereignty, make me a slave, get me into massive debt. Jeez, that's worth a vote, isn't it?
Sure. At least we would be honestly voting for someone that we really wanted in office, because we would be understanding that that is exactly what's happening to us. It wouldn't be a shock anymore. And then maybe people could make an informed decision at some point, or maybe think about making one, that they maybe don't want to go on status quo, you know, that it's not working.
Yeah. Well, see, the irony is, because I'll be telling the truth, people might actually vote for me simply because of the fact that I'm telling the truth. And they know that because I'm telling the truth, that I'm not one of them, that I actually see what the real problems are. And because I'm saying the exact opposite of what all the other politicians do, they all just tell you lies and then frack you over. I'm just going to lie to you and tell you that I'm going to frack you over. And then once elected, renege on all of my promises, just like the rest of the politicians do. So you'll be lulled into a false sense of security while I kick out the bankers, abolish the private central bank that runs this country, fire most of the directors of Treasury in this country, and dissolve Parliament with a giant aerial spraying of sulfuric acid. All right, I'll be done. You know, I mean, come on, ladies and gentlemen. Just vote for the troublemaker. All right, what do you got to lose? You've already lost all your freedoms. You've already lost all your financial security. You've already lost all your sovereignty. You've already lost all your healthcare benefits. You know, what do you got to lose? Just vote for the troublemakers. Vote for the rabble-rousers. Because at least they can mess with these people in Parliament. Because you can't. Because you're too busy with your slave job. Okay? That's what politics really should be about. Getting people to fight the battles for you that you cannot fight for yourself. Everything else, on the other hand, you have to take personal responsibility for and fight for yourself and not elect somebody to fight for you. Okay?
Oh, wait a minute. That sounds like a constitutional republic.
Yeah, fine.
Isn't that what America started off as?
Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. That's exactly what it was. You know, the states and the individual was sovereign. Just like the states, and the government was there to make sure the states could run their business, and the state was there to make sure that the individual had wasn't able to enact their rights. But the individuals had just as much sovereign rights as everybody else did, federal, state, and whatnot. So if you had a dispute, you could deal with it appropriately. You didn't have to go through all these channels and pay all these fees and if you had a complaint against someone in the legal system, it had to have a monetary damage attached to it. Otherwise, it wasn't a complaint, because if money wasn't being exchanged, it wasn't worth anyone's time. You know what I mean? That whole movement toward everything being surrounded by what the monetary value of everything is, and whether or not anyone has laid a claim because they have a sheet of paper that says they incurred so much monetary damage because they something bad happened to them, even though something bad happened to them and they have every right to go against the party that was responsible. Do you understand?
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And if you want to contribute to my political campaign, go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate today. Or better yet, make a long-term donation, because it'll be a long-term goal to sell the country out to the bankers. So I'll need a lot of funding on a consistent basis. So if you are an international banker and you want the country to be sold out to foreigners, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribe for $5 a month. I'm sure if you can create money out of thin air, you can give me $5 a month to frack the country on your behalf. I love being ironic. It's great. I can just imagine actually giving this speech in like a town hall or something like that with all the other politicians standing behind me going, God damn it, this guy's exposing our agenda by telling the truth. Frack! He's going to steal our votes.
Where's your electoral college now?
Yeah, that's right. I got political science down to a T. I've got a political science degree that is capable of engineering a political bioweapon to infect you with the truth, to make you have a death rattle, motherfracker.
Well, see, that's the funny thing about crowd psychology, is it's a tool in the hands of the people, just like technology. Technology is a tool. In the hands of the right people, there's nothing wrong with technology or advancing technologically. In the hands of the wrong people, it's a weapon. In the hands of the wrong people, crowd psychology is a weapon. It's a double-edged sword. It needs to be in the hands of the right people. Because there are ways in which we should think globally to facilitate all of our survival and harmoniously. However, in the hands of the wrong people, we have division and we have war and we have disease. And it's okay for someone to starve as long as I have my own.
Yeah. Well, I think we're being characterized by a lack of empathy for our common man, a lack of community. And the elite have done a remarkable job of destroying what it is to have a human society. Have you noticed that? I mean, it's only just starting to happen here in New Zealand now, but apparently it's been going on in the States for a while. People sitting at tables together, having a meal, and they don't say a frickin' word to each other, just eyes buried in their iPhone, you know?
Yes.
And there's no community anymore. There's no real relationships. I mean, when was the last time that you had a real conversation with somebody? There's a great movie called God Bless America. It's written by a comedian named Bobcat Goldthwait. And one of the lines from the film is, when was the last time you had a real conversation? You know, something important or something personal. And, you know, it's really sad. As people can go for years at a time without doing that. Me, I can barely go a day without having an important conversation with somebody. And that's not just because I've got a 5-day-a-week radio show where I invite on activists and people with important stuff to say. That's not the only reason why I don't go a day without it. It's because it's the only conversations that I choose to have. In fact, I was criticized one time when I was a student in Dunedin by a friend of mine saying, look, Vinny, you know what your problem is? And I go, what? And he says, you try to force good conversation on people.
Well, Vinny, I have to cut you off. I'm sorry. I have to go to break. But let's pick this up on the other side. Folks, don't go away. This is Hardline with Suzanne Posel, and I'm speaking to Vinny Eastwood from thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Hardline. This is our final segment, and we have Vinny Eastwood with us. TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com is his website. When you were talking, it reminded me of this this new RFID chip. Google owns Motorola Mobility. And so Motorola has filed a patent for this little electronic skin tattoo that can be applied to the throat or can be worn on a collar around the user's neck. Isn't that nice? This is what you were talking about. And it's trendy too. It's cool.
Yeah. It's cool to be a slave. And this is another part of my political campaign, is encourage people to be even more of a slave. If they see a police officer, they must get down on their knees and prostrate themselves in front of them and worship them as gods and ask them if you can clean their boots with your tongue. And if you do not prostrate yourself in front of a police officer and declare that they are God, that is an arrestable offense, okay? And you will be sent to government re-education where you will no longer have the mental capacity to think for yourself, because that's a threat to the state that I want to run. Okay? Vote for me if you want no change. That's all I'm saying, you know.
Listen to what this electronic skin tattoo can do. It can further include a galvanic skin response detector to detect skin resistance of the user. So it's able to be used as a lie detector. So you're putting this on because it's got, you can hook it up to your mobile phone. You can hook it up to your computer. It has a microphone so you can listen to music. It's on your neck, so it's right next to your ear. And it's a lie detector. Why would Google want people to wear an electronic lie detector?
So that when the police bust them, they can't see, no, that's not my weed, officer.
Absolutely. So they know that you're lying. They've got it on record. Because remember that the data that it flows through between you and the third party to get to its destination, that in-between space, that belongs to that party that you have the contractual agreement with, and they're able to do whatever they want with it. Give it to any other party, any third party that they want, the government. They can sell it for advertising purposes or just keep it if they want to profile you.
It's a scary world we're beginning to see getting set up, isn't it? It's quite depressing, actually, you know? Like, you think about this. How many people died so that the United States could have a constitution, you know? Why do you think the Founding Fathers said these rights are given to us by God? You know why? Because God has more authority than government. And the founding fathers knew that rights should be endowed to you by an authority greater than government. Therefore, government would be incapable of taking them away. And the problem is, constitutions stop being taught to people. Civics stop being taught in schools. So now people have no idea that their rights are endowed to them by God. No idea whatsoever. And as a result of people not knowing where their rights really come from, they think it comes from the government and think that the government can take those rights away from you. It's not the case. Never has been. Never should be. But unfortunately, it's very difficult to stop people believing in lies. In fact, Mark Twain had a great quote regarding this. He says, it's far easier to convince somebody of a lie than to convince somebody that they've been lied to.
That is absolutely true. People believe that they're being lied to by government or by the mainstream or any media outlet. They don't believe the lie when they're personally involved. They just don't believe you. You can show them copious amounts of evidence and they absolutely refuse. That is cognitive dissonance. That is cognitive dissonance. When they see the evidence and they just look at you and say, that's not true. That's not true.
And that's the irony with cognitive dissonance, because cognitively it makes me want to diss them because they're being so freaking stupid.
But that is the psychosis of the society. That's the blockage. It's not what the government is doing. It's not what corporations are doing. The blockage is coming from the people themselves because they see the evidence and they just say, I don't believe it. They come up with any excuse in their mind. They sleep on it. They come up with some scheme. They understand something from some other level. And then all of a sudden it negates all of the evidence that you've brought to their table and they don't believe you. The evidence was faked. It's falsified. It was photoshopped. Ironically, people exposing corruption, it seems to be the audience is swayed depending on whether or not it benefits them. If it benefits them that a group exposes corruption, they say, wow, yay, the group is exposing corruption. If it doesn't benefit them that the group is exposing corruption, they say, oh, that group is part of the CIA. That group is part of the government. That group is a psyop. I just don't get the reasoning when we're
That's
trying to...
That's because there is none. And you're trying to reason why some people are being unreasonable. Doesn't work. It's like, I mean, seriously, it's like walking in a running race. It doesn't work. Okay? You're just not on the same wave level. You're not on the same wavelength. I mean, it's just not possible to understand insanity without becoming insane. All right.
Why is it okay to expose some corruption and not expose other corruption? Why is other
Because that corruption I'm invested in emotionally, and therefore I don't want it to be exposed. Just that simple. People are afraid of emotional trauma. People are afraid of thinking, man, I was wrong all this time. I'll actually have to think for myself. Damn, that's a lot of responsibility to think for myself. You're saying I also have to review evidence myself without having somebody just tell me exactly what it is and not have to read anything, not have to actually explore anything? You're telling me I have to do all this now? That I actually have to take personal responsibility for my own thoughts and my own words? Frack that.
You know,
I'd rather give it to some authority figure.
That's common law, and that's part of a constitutional republic. That's part of what we were talking about earlier. When the individual people of this nation under a constitutional republic were sovereign, they had the rights under common law to go to have settle and dispute issues with each other just as readily as a legal system would. And it had just as merit and just as much bite, as much force, the agreements, accords, judgments that came down as a result. But here in this culture now, you know, you don't show up on time, whatever. I'm sorry, and it's no big deal. You make a promise to someone to help them fix something, and you don't do it. Oh, well, it's no big deal. You know, we don't have any personal responsibility toward our own personal lives, and we have no personal responsibility in any of the actions that we do, because it's always some other boogeyman somewhere out there doing it to us. When part of the huge, gigantic problem is our participation in it at every single level. And if we stop, that would take a major part of the equation out of it.
I think you're right. And it seems that people overdo this whole personal responsibility thing. You know, it's all they talk about. Oh, you know, personal sovereignty, blah, 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 blah. Well, here's the problem with people who criticize personal responsibility. Everything is caused by people not taking responsibility. You have a moral obligation to think for yourself. A moral obligation to discern fact from fiction. If you vote for somebody who destroys your country because you didn't think for yourself, it is your fault that the country gets destroyed. If you listen to somebody on talk radio and you never check out a single one of the facts that they claim to have to verify whether or not there is any evidence at all, and that person winds up destroying movements, hijacking things, destroying people's lives, that is your fault because you didn't take that moral responsibility to have your own house in order. It is your fault, ladies and gentlemen, that America is the way it is. It is your fault that radio show hosts who are psychopathic grow to fame. It is your fault that the mainstream media keeps lying to people. It is your fault that the police are private institutions. It is your fault that the groundwater is being contaminated by fracking. It is all your fault. I've realized that all of my problems were all my fault, and I decided that I'd start doing something about it. That making $5,000 a month, cash in hand, wasn't good enough for me. I wanted to expose a little bit of scumbaggery. I wanted to improve the world around me. I didn't want to make money. Why would I want to actually just spend my entire life making money and never actually do anything important with my life? Okay?
I realized that I was to blame. I was to blame for my own life's problems. Later on, I realized that I was to blame for the way that my government is turning out, for the way people are behaving around me, because I wasn't standing my ground and I wasn't taking my responsibilities to myself and society at large seriously enough. You can listen to me at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. There's Vinny with the wire because it's the most important question, and Eastwood doesn't go ahead. Make my news on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And for those of you who are listening live, I guess I'm coming up next. And thank you, Suzanne, for allowing me this this wonderful platform you got here on the Time for Hemp Network.
Thank you very much for coming. And I'll have you back on. And folks, go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com. His show starts in about 5 minutes, and go listen to Vinny Eastwood. And thank you, Vinny, for coming on my show. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll speak with you on Thursday. Take care.